I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roll Pod, an Alabama sports podcast from Bama 247. I am staff writer Cody Goodwin coming to you live from Los Angeles, where Alabama is going to be playing in the Sweet 16 later this week at the old Staples Center, now called Crypto Arena. They're going to be playing top-seeded North Carolina. We're going to talk about how they got to this point in the NCAA tournament. Sweet 16 for the second straight year, third time in 4 years, and 11th time in program history. That includes the 1987 Sweet 16 that was vacated because of a betting scandal. But to discuss what Alabama has done to this point in the postseason, I'm joined remotely by Mike Rodak. Mike, you've watched both of these games, but I got to ask before we start talking about Alabama, how's your bracket doing? We're through the first two weekend, like the first two rounds. Like, are you still alive? How's your Final Four looking?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said last time, it's all about the Final Four. Like, if you can pick the Final Four right, if you can pick the national champion right, like, it makes up for missing a lot of stuff earlier on. So I still have 3 out of 4 alive in the Final Four. I had UConn, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Kentucky, which the last one was a miss.
Big
I should have known, because defense wins championships in March. Kentucky does not play defense. I thought that they would be talented enough to make a run, that this would be the year for Calipari to turn around. And certainly I was wrong on that end, but, you know, it's not too bad. You know, I feel like I picked enough upsets. You know, Kentucky's the only have two teams in the Elite Eight that, you know, aren't there. I think I had Baylor and Kentucky. So I'm 6 out of 8, still alive for the Elite Eight. You know, it puts me in a pretty good spot, and I still have UConn winning it all. I think UConn continues to look pretty unstoppable. So I feel good about that pick.
There you go. I think I've got, so I got 11 of the 16, but similar to you, like most of the teams I have going deep are still in it. I think I've got 7 of 8 still alive in all Final Four. And, you know, like you, I picked UConn. I had UConn, Arizona coming out of the West region. We'll touch on them here a little bit later in the show. Then I had Houston and Tennessee. So Houston may have lucked out with Kentucky going down, because I think Kentucky was, we'll see what Marquette can do ultimately. But I thought Kentucky was really kind of the primary, like, you know, can they take out Houston? And then Tennessee, Purdue, we'll see kind of what happens there. Although Tennessee has to get through Creighton, though. So there was a lot of action going on over the weekend, as there usually is in the first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament. But I'm glad to hear that your bracket's still kind of standing.
Well, Houston had to survive A&M, which by the
that was crazy.
They were almost run out of players. But I would imagine I'm only like in 16th place in my, you know, bracket pool. It's like, there's a lot of people, I think, have a lot of teams still alive, because there really hasn't been ton of like upsets. You know, I think of this top four seeds, most of them are in the Sweet 16, which is what you'd expect, or what, you know, chalk would kind of be there. So outside of like Oakland and, you know, NC State, like there hasn't been too many teams that have really made noise in the lower seeds. So I don't want to say it's a boring tournament, because there's been some pretty exciting games and pretty good finishes, but you know, I've definitely seen tournaments that have produced more Cinderellas or more upsets going into the Sweet 16 than this one has.
Yeah, there's just one double-digit seed, NC State, sneaking out of the South region. So they beneficiary, I think. Well, they took out Texas Tech first, who was the sixth seed, and then were able to survive Oakland, so they'll get Marquette. And then I guess you could argue Clemson as the sixth seed. They took out, you know, pre-tournament, you know, not favorite, but pre-tournament darling, New Mexico first. And then they were able to put the clamps on Baylor, which I thought was pretty impressive in the second round. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, Auburn maybe going down was a little surprising. I know that there were a lot of people that had picked them to go pretty deep after the way that they played in the SEC tournament. But, you know, it's funny. Most years I pick the Ivy League champ to win at least one game. But when I saw that it was Yale Auburn, I was like, I don't know, man. Like Auburn played really, really well. And then, like, you know, they were in Spokane with, you know, the rest of the Alabama media contingent. So we were all there getting to watch it live. And it was like, oh, okay. Like this is just 4 weird minutes and the entire game flipped. And next thing you know, Auburn's going home. Like it was really bizarre, but yeah, that's, you know, kind of par for the course in March.
That's March. I mean, that's what happens. And it's tricky because you have some really good teams and, you know, teams that win SEC championships, you know, tournament championships like Auburn does, team that wins and that SEC regular season championship. Alabama's done 2 of the last 3 years and it doesn't always translate to March, but March is kind of where legacies are made. So, I mean, I think coaches, and you've heard Nate talk about this a little bit too. It's like sometimes there's a tendency to overrate the NCAA tournament and underrate all the games that are played before that, 30 something games. But again, legacies are kind of made on what you do this week. Like this is the most important week of the season for a lot of these schools.
Yeah. I would say that Nate Oates and Alabama doing a pretty good job of building, you know, what is a program that's maybe not quite on the level of the Blue Bloods, but that is certainly becoming a force to be reckoned with on a pretty regular basis. Like we mentioned at the top of the show, Alabama back in the Sweet 16, second consecutive year, third time in 4 years, 11th time in program history. Again, that includes 1987, which was vacated, you know, officially by the NCAA. Last weekend, first round beat Charleston 109-96. Second round beat Grand Canyon 72-61. They're going to play North Carolina, the top seed in the West region, this Thursday here in LA at Crypto Arena. Let's start here, Mike. Like, what was kind of your initial reaction or maybe big picture thoughts or takeaways from the first weekend for Alabama? It seemed like they won a game in a shootout, which is more or less what we expected. And then they won their second round game with some pretty gritty defense, which was a little bit of a change of pace, given how they had playing going into the tournament. What'd you kind of think overall about the way they played?
Yeah. I mean, it still in some ways falls in line with what they've done all year, which is there's never been a problem with Alabama, this Alabama team beating mid majors. Like they did it pretty convincingly, pretty handily early in the season. And then you get Charleston and you get Grand Canyon, which naturally are two of the best mid-majors right now. And, you know, you had a little bit more trouble, obviously, with Grand Canyon than you did Charleston. It's probably to be expected because I think Charleston's style probably played into Alabama, as long as Alabama was hitting shots. And they hit shots better than they have in a while, and Charleston did not by any means. And that was the story of that game. I mean, even though Charleston scored 62 points in the second half, it never really was in doubt, in question. It was all about Alabama shooting in the first half. So, you know, like I really would wonder how the St. Mary's game would have gone if St. Mary's had beaten Grand Canyon and Alabama played St. Mary's. That would have been a super slow-paced game, probably a little bit worse of a matchup to me for Alabama, like the things we talked about with the last show with their center and again, that pace and the style of game. I think Grand Canyon probably played a little bit more into what Alabama wanted to do. They're a little bit faster paced, more athletic than St. Mary's is, but it just, they weren't like they had opportunities. Grand Canyon had a chance, especially when they took the lead late. But you just never felt like they were cohesive enough on offense. You never felt like they had that one player that was going to do it. I mean, Tyon Grant Foster was their best player, but just never really looked all that dominant. Had 29 points, but it was like on 22 shots and was terrible at the free throw line. So even then, it didn't feel like they were going to be able to string enough together offensively to beat Alabama. Charles Barkley just destroyed Grand Canyon after the game. I think it was some of the dumbest basketball that he's ever seen. And he's probably right. Like it was pretty ugly. I made the point, like you take one UNC player, you take Cormac Ryan or RJ Davis or Armando Bacot, just take one of those guys and put them on Grand Canyon. I'm not sure Alabama wins that game. Grand Canyon was just kind of missing that go-to guy, and Alabama had it. A in Sears, but B, I mean, Diabate came in as well and made the plays that they needed at the end. So it got a little hairy, but at the end of the day, like it wasn't like you play the 12 and the 13 seed and you're a 4 seed, like you should be winning those games, and they did. So this is kind of where the real tournament starts, if you will, because now, you know, if you want to win a national championship, you got to beat four teams right now that are better than you, I would say, you know, at this point. So it's going to be tough just to even win one of those. And obviously it starts with North Carolina, and we'll get into that. But I don't know if anything was too surprising for that first weekend for Alabama to me.
Yeah, I think if anything was maybe surprising, and we'll probably get into this a little bit more, it was, you know, the contributions, I guess, of Mo Diabate, who, you know, more or less a defensive liability, wasn't really a guy that played a ton of minutes during the season, when especially in a lot more of those higher stakes games. Like, he just, you know, he would see his minutes here and there in the first and the second half, but really when they needed to make things happen, he was not the guy on the floor. And so for him to come through in the couple of games the way he did, thought that was fairly impressive. But no, I think I agree with you in that, like, you know, when the draws came out, we knew Alabama wasn't playing very well. And then you see that they have a manageable path to get to the second weekend. It's like, okay, like, that's, you know, even though they had lost 4 of 6, I think a lot of us were like, yeah, like, this is something that they can do. And so to be able to take advantage of that, even though they, you know, they didn't get to play St. Mary's, they, you know, got to play the team that beat them. So there's something to be said about that, but they were able to take advantage of the draw to get to the Sweet 16. And I think there's something to be said about that too, you know, even despite all the struggles through really the month of February, and especially, you know, those last 6 games, you know, says a lot about them that they were able to regroup for a little bit and do what, you know, the seed said that they were supposed to do. Right. You know, and mission accomplished. They didn't really do anything super spectacular in order to get there. They just kind of played their games. But, you know, there's something to be said about taking care of business, even though you hadn't, I guess, leading up to it. And so thumbs up from me for that.
Yeah. And I think playing the way that they did, again, it's been a story all season. Like, you play bad offense, it affects your defense, it gets in your head, they kind of spiral. That didn't happen in this game. They kind of got into a hairy situation and they pulled out of it, which, you know, they did against Georgia on the road. They did against Ole Miss on the road. They've done it a few games. Again, those are all Florida at home, Auburn at home to some extent. You know, for the most part, you know, they've shown that, but still, against the best teams, you get into the hairy situations and things just have spiraled out of control. So it's going to be a completely different animal if you fall behind to North Carolina than compared to falling behind to Grand Canyon. And, you know, they obviously realize that. Nate Oates realizes it. It's obvious, but, you know, commend them on what they did against Grand Canyon. Nate Oates called it one of their better character wins of the year. I would agree. It's one of their better defensive wins of the year. I agree. But he also said after the game on TBS that we got to play better than this to beat North Carolina, and they sure as heck do.
Yeah, we'll touch on that here in just a moment, but I want to kind of tie a little bit of a bow on the first couple of rounds from them. What was one thing, Mike, that you liked about the way that Alabama played? Let's hand out some compliments.
They played hard. You know, like, we've heard Nate Oates talk about effort, you know, for years, not just this year, but certain parts of this season. You know, he's really chided them for their effort. I think the Auburn game on the road comes to mind. The Tennessee game on the road, the Kentucky game on the road. Like, he's talked about guys not playing hard enough and not wanting it enough. There's even a point early in the year where he talked about guys being, you know, it's a really good group of kids on this team is basically how he phrased it. But he said, you know, they've got to kind of have that edge and that want to, and that way to pull out games. And from like a mental attitude, approach, effort, whatever word you want to call it, like, they seem to check that box in the Grand Canyon game. And they didn't really need to against Charleston. I guess they did early on, just to kind of, you know, they fell behind 19-13 to Charleston early in that game, and they showed it, I guess, there. They probably didn't show it, you know, when they had the big lead up 31. But they definitely showed it against Grand Canyon. So if you play with effort, and, you know, that I think probably shows most on defense, then you're going to be in good shape, or better shape at least. So if they play with effort against North Carolina, it's going to put them in a good spot. But not only do they have to play with effort, they also have to execute. They have to make their shots. They have to do all the things that they need to do. So it's going to be combining that that they are, I think are going to need to show on Thursday night.
Yeah, there was a level of mental toughness there in the first two games to different degrees and different levels that maybe we hadn't seen really in some of these other games. You know, a lot's been made of, you know, losing four of the last six games going into the tournament, but you know, it was the way that they lost those games that I think was really kind of worrisome to me, right? Like they weren't able to get over the hump and finish against Tennessee at home. When they went on the road against Kentucky and Florida, it's almost like they just kind of laid down, right? Like it was just kind of, we're on the road. This is a good team we're playing. You know, it's, I don't want to say that they didn't think they had a shot, but they certainly didn't play like it. And then again, Florida in the SEC tournament, like fast start, they're up 8-0, and then Florida just kind of very calmly punched them right back in the mouth and yeah, outscored them over the next 20 game minutes. And that was more or less the game. So, you know, that was kind of my question, like where are they at between the ears? And two games, you know, again, different varying degrees, different opponents. There were times where they looked a little frazzled. And like you said, things got a little hairy, right? Down 19-13 to Charleston early. There was a lot of miscommunication. Like we were down sitting courtside watching the game. Like Oates was full throat, like not happy with the effort that he was seeing. And then media timeout, they get settled. Mo D and Mo Dub go out on the floor. They spark a 10-0 run, I think it was. And, you know, next thing you know, they're up 51-34 at half, and they lead by as many as 31 in the second half and pull away from Charleston. Against Grand Canyon, they had a 10-point lead. It disappeared. So they're down 58-55, I believe it was, with 6 minutes left. And again, like they had a moment where they were able to recollect themselves. They go on a 17-3 run to close it. They don't allow a field goal, I think, over the last 6 minutes, which was, you know, maybe a little bit of Grand Canyon taking some weird shots, running some weird offense, but also give a little bit of credit to Alabama's defense, man. They were, you know, they were very aggressive, right? Yes. I think we can look at that via the foul numbers, right? Like they were in Grand Canyon's grill almost the entire way. So it was good to see them, you know, go through some trials in that way and respond in a way that maybe we hadn't seen them, even if the competition wasn't quite SEC level or, you know, a North Carolina type that they're going to see later this week. But, you know, it was just nice to see that, like, okay, like these guys had some fight, these guys have some pride in their performance, and it was good to see them, you know, rally in situations where, you know, for a minute we weren't sure if they were going to rally, and we, you know, is their season going to end here? And they decided that it wasn't, and they got to the Sweet 16.
Yeah. I mean, it's a team that, yeah, especially against Florida in the SEC tournament, you're like, does this team have a pulse? Like they just seem so, it just, there was nothing there. And then I think the pendulum probably swung too much in the other direction against Grand Canyon, because they sure as heck had a pulse, and they were probably too heated early in that game, kind of reacting to some of those fouls, and Oates got the technical, and Pringle was pretty upset, and then Pringle sitting on the bench, and he
the old clipboard
and yeah, breaks off a piece. And you know, Oates even talked about after the game, like emotionally they had to kind of reel themselves in. But that's probably better than having to, as a coach, get your team up for NCAA tournament game. So it's probably better that they had that fire and that intensity than, again, trying to manufacture it, which, again, if you're trying to manufacture that at this time of year, that's a problem. So I don't say they've solved that problem, because who knows how they're going to come out and play against North Carolina, but I think they'll play pretty inspired and just kind of see how far it gets them in that game.
Yeah, we kind of loosely touched on maybe a couple of things that we could discuss in this next segment, but we talked about what we liked. What was one thing that maybe you did not like about the way Alabama played in the first two rounds?
I mean, it's two very different games with two very different problems. But I think, you know, the turnover issue against Grand Canyon really wasn't something that kind of reared its head, especially late in the game. I think there was a stretch, trying to find here the exact for Alabama turnover wise. Yeah, they had from the 11:02 mark, turnover, next possession, turnover, 3-point miss, turnover, good layup, turnover. And then a couple minutes later, Pringle turnover, Estrada turnover. Like they had a pretty rough stretch there. And that's what, because out at the end of that is when Grand Canyon was leading 58-55. So it was that 6 turnover stretch that really led to that 10-point lead collapsing. And the turnover issue was obviously a big part of some of their losses, in February and March and early in March. And if that comes up against North Carolina, then they're in trouble. I to some extent, you can say the three-point shooting maybe concerned you against Grand Canyon. They're 8 of 31, 26%. Like, it wasn't great. 37% for the game was one of their worst of the year. But, you know, Charleston, the game before, they shot a lot better from three. So you just never know how that's going to show up against North Carolina. Are they going to shoot 20% from three and lose? Or are they going to shoot 40% and be in a good spot? Like, you don't really know. But if you can cut down on the turnovers, then I think you kind of help yourself out a little bit. You know, you're combining problems on offense when you can't shoot and you're turning the ball over. If you can clean up the turnovers but you can't shoot, it's a little bit better. You can deal with that.
Yeah, no, I think that's an astute point, especially coming up against a team like North Carolina. It's going to take advantage of those turnovers. So you need to maybe cut those down as best you can against the Tar Heels. The one thing that really maybe bothered me over the course of the weekend, and it really wasn't until Sunday's game got over with that I kind of looked back and was just like, huh, that's a little interesting. I'm not in the business of calling individual people out. I don't think that's very nice. I think that may be a little bit unprofessional, but Grant Nelson was very underwhelming this weekend.
Yes.
I think he finished, if I find the stats here, you know, kind of I was looking at how all the transfers did, because I know a big deal about, you know, Alabama getting back to the Sweet 16 is they lost five of their top six scorers from last year and basically filled all those roles in through the portal with Trelly and Estrada and Grant Nelson, obviously. Finished a combined 1 of 7 shooting across both games, 6 total points played, only 31 total minutes, had a lot of foul trouble against Grand Canyon. Watching that game, the foul trouble came early and often, and you could just tell, just little rattled mentally, and he just, you could tell pretty quickly that he was just not going to have a very large impact on that game. Now, his role's a little bit different, right, than maybe what it was at North Dakota State. And, you know, I think in, you know, some games there, it takes a few minutes for him to maybe figure out, okay, what do I need to do this game for us to have success? You know, maybe it says something that Alabama is able to win two games in two different ways really without him. But, you know, I think they're going to need quite a bit more out of him if they're going to want to pull, you know, what would be a pretty stunning upset if they're able to win on Thursday. Like, you're going to need more than 3 points per game. You're going to need more than 1 for 7 shooting total. You're going to need, this kid can't get into foul trouble. And, you know, seeing who North Carolina has and the personnel on the other side of the bracket with Clemson and Arizona, we talked earlier this season about how teams with good bigs tend to give this Alabama team problem when Grant's playing the five. You know, do the math, man. Like, that's it wasn't good against these, you know, lower tier mid-major programs. What is it going to look like against North Carolina, right? Like, it's just, they're going to need more from this guy. And you know, first two games in the NCAA tournament, it was not very impressive. I was like, dang, man, he just did not have a good weekend.
No, yeah, outside of that block, he had two blocks, but outside of that, I mean, 16 minutes, 0-4 shooting, 1 rebound, 4 fouls, 3 points, 1 turnover, 1 steal. Like, that's bad. And yeah, there's been a decent amount of games like that for Grant Nelson, especially when he gets in the foul trouble and his minutes aren't great and his numbers kind of come down with that. And, you know, look, I think even Nate was talking to the TV people before the Grand Canyon game, and I think told them that he needed a lot more out of Grant in that game. Didn't get it. There was even a moment going into one of those timeouts. I think Grant took an outside shot. He was 0-1 on threes. It must have been that 1-3 that he missed. And TBS pretty clearly showed Mark Sears getting in Grant's face about that and not happy about the shot that he took or basically what he was doing on the floor. So, you know, it's that guy is – he's big for what they need to do. I agree. Like, in a perfect world, he's what you wanted when he came here, when he chose to come to Alabama last summer. Like, but this is the time to do it. Like, it's, you're running out of chances, and it's been an ongoing thing for most of the year. He's had some good games, some games where he's saved them. I mean, the Auburn game at home, he had a couple big shots, and there's been a few others, but the Georgia game on the road. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like North Carolina, like, it's gonna be interesting to see how they handle this lineup. First of all, you need to know whether Latrell Wrightsell is going to play. And, you know, Nate said after the game that he's going to, but then he was on, you know, tied 100.9 on Monday and was certainly less certain about that, saying essentially it's going to go up until Thursday, and we'll have to see how he does with some of the concussion tests and all that. So if you do have Wrightsell, maybe you stick with that small lineup and you put Wrightsell at the 3, Griffin at the 4, Grant at the 5. you're probably asking for trouble against Orlando Baycott doing that. So the other option is to start Pringle at the five and put Grant at the four and have either Reitzel or Griffin come off the bench. But yeah, I mean, either way, you're going to need one of your bigs to probably take some fouls against Baycott and try to muck up the game that way. You're probably going to have to rotate through with Wagi and Diabate and Stevenson and try to use all your bigs. And you're going to need at least one of them to step up, though, and kind of be that guy against Baycott. And you're going to need your guards to defend against RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan, which is probably the two hardest matchups they've had all year in terms of a combination of a backcourt there. So it's not going to be easy. And, that's, again, I think it does start with Grant Nelson in terms of if you want to win this game, I think he needs to play better.
Yeah. And it's not like they need him to be, a 20 and 10 guy. Like they somewhere in the ballpark of 10 to 12 points, somewhere in the ballpark of 6, 7, 8 rebounds, maybe a couple of blocks here and there, and then just serviceable defense and then stay out of foul trouble. If for no other reason than to maybe keep your head in a big game like this, because you can't, like the way he was reacting to some of the fouls he was getting against Grand Canyon, you could tell pretty quickly, okay, this guy is not going to have a very big impact on this game. You can't have that against North Carolina. You got to keep your head. You got to do your best to stay out of foul trouble, and you just got to find the ways that you can contribute. If he goes 1 for 3, 0 for 4, whatever the case may be, like Alabama's going to get run off the floor. And that may still happen even if he is able to contribute more than he did this past weekend. But, I think the fact that Alabama was able to win really without any large contributions, one, probably another credit to how well Alabama did play at times this past weekend in the first couple of rounds. But, not probably the way they're going to want to live or have to live if they're going to want to find a way to pull the upset and advance to the Elite Eight. So I don't know. That was one of those things where I kind of looked back at the box scores and I was just like, dude had a rough weekend.
Yeah. And it's even Aaron Estrada, 4-14, had a lot of missed layups, 0-4 from three. He did win the hard hat. He had 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Like,
he stuffed the stat sheet, man. Estrada played. He played hard. He played hard in the stats reflect that.
Played good defense, 4 steals. But like you you start combining some of those numbers again against North Carolina. Estrada goes 4-14. Nelson goes 0-4. Right. So if he plays, goes 1-4, like you're going to have a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Again, because you're playing against maybe not the most talented team in college basketball, but they're definitely in the top five every single year, just because that's what that program is. Like, this is a much different animal than Grand Canyon or Charleston. So again, I'm sure they know that, they understand that, they're all smart. But that's what's going to come down to on Thursday night is, can you beat players that in some cases are probably better than you? This is probably, again, a more talented North Carolina team than this current Alabama team is. You put last year's Alabama team, I think it might be a fairer fight, but this Alabama team is just a little bit more limited, for the reasons that we've talked about, because Grant Nelson is not what we thought Grant Nelson would be. And, Jaren Stevenson's not to the level of what Noah Clowney was last year. And you don't have Brandon Miller as much as Mark Sears does what he does. You're just a little bit more limited in what you can do.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull and Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Yeah, 100%. That was the first couple of rounds from Alabama. I know we've touched on a little bit just through the conversation, but looking ahead to Thursday's game against North Carolina, they're the one seed in the West for a reason. You look at, you know, some of their KenPom numbers, believe they're number 16 in adjusted offensive efficiency, number 6 in adjusted defensive efficiency, believe they ended the regular season in the top 20 in both. So this is a really formidable team. They did not win the ACC because NC State got hot and they continue to play hot on the other side of the bracket. But clearly the committee thought that they were more than deserving of a one seed. They took out, you know, Michigan State in the second round after beating the 16 seed in the first round. This is a really good team. This is a really good team. They've got players all over the place. Mike, in your estimation, what is one question that you have, or what is one thing that you're really going to be watching with regards to whether or not Alabama can, you know, I don't want to say can they compete in this game, because I think they can, but like what is going to be, you know, one primary thing you're looking for in terms of, you know, can they pull this upset? Like, what do they need to do well to give themselves a shot?
You need to shoot. And, you know, I know it's been funny because all year we've talked about how the defense is the issue, and, you know, you can play defense, you win. And, you know, that's still obviously a big part of it. But even, you know, Nate Oates on his radio show last night was talking about how it's really the offense that needs to get better right now, because they're not where their numbers say they are. The numbers are still saying they're top four offense. Obviously they haven't played like that lately. And they've played much better on defense. They're better than what their number defensively has. But, you know, this is a game where you're going to need to hit shots. And it didn't happen against San Diego State last year. It didn't happen particularly at the free throw line against UCLA 3 years ago in the Sweet 16. And if you're going, again, 24, 25% from three or worse, then like you're going to be in a tough spot. But if you're doing what I think this team is certainly capable of doing and making 35% plus of your threes and getting up there, then you're playing to your strengths. You're playing to what you're able to do. So, you know, having Reitzel is going to be part of that, but you know, Griffin, Estrada, Sears, can they hit their shots? If Jaron Stevenson's on the court, Sam Walters is on the court, can they come in and hit their shots? Walters did late in that Grand Canyon game, but he missed a few before that. What did he finish at for that game? He has 1 of 5. So again, you start stacking together some of those stat lines against North Carolina, you're going to be in trouble. But if you start stacking together 2 of 4, 3 of 5 from three, you know, 1 of 2, like you're going to be in a better spot. So, you know, I know it's kind of runs counter to what Nate always says. It's always about defense, but I truly think this is a game where I'm going to be watching. Are you making your shots? Are you making your three pointers? Because that's still their bread and butter. That's how they're going to win.
I wonder, I know we've kind of loosely joked, but maybe not 100% joked about this throughout the course of the season, but like, is this one of those games where I don't want to say you don't worry about defense, because you do have to play some semblance of defense and get at least a few stops if you're going to want to pull an upset like this. But like, is this one of those games where you literally try to win it like 109 to 100, or, you know, 100 to 90 something or something like that? Do you just literally try to outscore North Carolina? Or like, if you were NATO, what would your game plan going into this be?
I'm not smart enough to be NATO, certainly, especially from a basketball X's and O's standpoint. I haven't really watched enough North Carolina film to say we're going to attack these guys a certain way. But look, I think if you're slowing the game down and you're trying to pound the ball inside, and like that's not Alabama's game. Like, they're still going to want to get in transition. They're going to want to shoot the three-pointer. You want to drive to the rim, get Sears to the foul line. Like, that's what they're going to have to do. Like, they're not – I have a hard time seeing them winning this game, giving it to Grant Nelson or Nick Pringle down low and having him, one of those two, trying to score over Marno Bacot. Like, it's – I don't know if that's the method here. So you need your shooters to shoot. That's something Nate, again, has talked about, where they're going to try to get a little bit of rest this week and get their legs back, get their confidence back shooting, and they're going to need it Thursday night. So – that's, again, that's what they do. Like, that's their game plan, is to shoot threes and make them and get to the rim and make those shots. And they didn't do either of those particularly well against Grand Canyon. They got to be a lot better in both areas.
Yeah. And I think the if you're looking for some semblance of good news, maybe, or, you know, optimism, you know, Mark Sears was tremendous offensively this past weekend, 56 total points between the two games, dropped 30 against Charleston on Friday, 26 against Grand Canyon on Sunday, shot a combined 17 of 31 from the floor, 8 of 17 from three. I think for a while, especially on Sunday against Grand Canyon, like, he was Alabama's offense. So, I you know, he's been pretty steady, 20 some points all year long. Seems like he's taken it up a notch here through the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. So it's good to kind of have him. But I think, you know, another guy that maybe impressed me a little bit, Rylan Griffin, I thought shot the ball pretty well. Not a ton of shots, but, you know, shooting 50% from the floor, generally a good thing. I think, what, 13 points and 9 points in the two games. Obviously, it'd be nice to have Trelly if, as long as he's healthy. He put up 17 against Charleston. Obviously was out late in the first half with his head injury against Grand Canyon, but he could have been useful. And then Aaron Estrada, just, you know, shot selection maybe a little suspect, but the guy just seems to find a way to get to double figures, even if it's only 10 points. Probably going to need to be a little bit smarter with his shot selection against North Carolina. So, like, you can kind of see the path there. It's going to have to be probably more than just, you know, Mark Sears in the Mark Searsettes, if they're going to want to pull this upset. But I agree. Like, I think, you know, they need to shoot. They need to shoot like they did against Charleston, as opposed to how they did against Grand Canyon. Against Grand Canyon, at one point, they missed 13 consecutive shots in the first half. And then in the second half, they missed 5 shots in a row on 2 separate occasions. So that can't happen. I agree with you. I think it's going to be offense. And I just wonder, is, you know, are they going to just literally try to win it, you know, with the high 90s, maybe even 100 points. But I don't, again, you look at North Carolina, this is not a team that gives up a lot of points. They're very good when it comes to defensive efficiency rating. They don't give up a lot of points per game, and they find a way to lock down, you know, Michigan State, for example, right? Like, they took out Mississippi State by shooting lights out from three in the first round. They did that for what, 4-8 minutes in the second round game against UNC, and then UNC kind of settled down, shut them down, and ultimately pulled away for a pretty convincing, comfortable second round win. So I just, you know, it's going to be hard. But that's the point of getting to this point of the season. All these games are going to be hard.
And this is Sears' time too. I mean, it could be his last season. I mean, I guess theoretically he can come back for one more, but this could be his last chance, you know, if he decides to go pro after this year. And, you know, he's been in this spot before too, with, you know, the North Carolina game last season. It was very early in Sears' tenure, just transferred in from Ohio. And he played really well in that game, if I remember correctly, and was kind of right in the mix in some of those big moments and 4 overtimes, you know, kept coming down to these final possessions. And the ball was in his hands against North Carolina, which was the number one team in the country at the time. And he's only gotten better since. I think he's only gotten more experience in some of these big games since. And, you know, he's had a few moments late in the season where he's turned the ball over or, you know, missed shots or whatever. And, you know, the Florida game and tournament was, you know, probably the worst for him. But I think these last couple games, he's looked a lot better. And, again, this is kind of the game of his life. I think, you know, you put the ball in his hands in some key moments, and I think he's a player who can win the game for you.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Alabama has played 5 other teams that are in the Sweet 16 this weekend. They played Clemson, Arizona, Purdue, Creighton. Also played Tennessee twice. Don't look up their record in those games, because they haven't won a single one. 0-6 against other teams that are currently in the Sweet 16. Now they get a shot at North Carolina on Thursday. Mike, any other final thoughts before we sign off here ahead of Thursday's game?
No, I think it's, you know, I think Nate Oates gave great perspective on it last night on his radio show about, you know, there's a lot of celebration about the Sweet 16, and there should be, because, you know, they haven't done this back-to-back years since 1990, 91, 3 out of 4 Sweet 16s. You know, there's only 3 other schools that have done that. And I think he's certainly appreciative of that. But one of the things I like about Nate is, like, he keeps it real. And he's basically said that, you know, you got to make a Final Four run. Like, you got to get a little bit deeper to really get that respect and get that, again, that appreciation of your program and where you're at. And winning this game, I think, even if you, let's say they win this game and they lose to Arizona or whatever, and they don't make the Final Four, like, there's still – I think a step forward that happens from that. You lose this game and it's a close game. I think there's still a lot of, it was a great season. You ran into the number one seed and, maybe there's an injury issue with right cell. You can talk about, you get blown out in this game and, you're starting to stack a little bit of some amount of disappointment, I think, in the NCAA tournament. Last year, certainly a disappointment. Like, they should have beaten San Diego State.
It seemed like the stars aligned for them all the way last year. Like, if they had found a way to get through San Diego State, right? Like, it was, they would have been monster favorites in the Elite Eight.
Right. 2 years ago, like, disappointment. You go to San Diego, you lose to Notre Dame as an 11 seed. You were a 6 seed. They were an 11 seed. And that was a season when you had beaten Baylor and Gonzaga and another really good team during the season. And had some promise. The year before, you're the number 2 seed. You get upset by UCLA, which was an 11 seed that year. Miss 4 free throws in the final minute. You could have won that game. So, it's hard to win in March. It's hard to get to Elite Eights. It's hard to get the Final Fours. But this team has gotten so far, you feel like they can do it. And so there is a certain amount of disappointment that I think would come with getting blown out by North Carolina on Thursday night. And there's a difference between losing by 25 and losing by 5. Like, I think there's certainly a difference between that. But again, listen to Nate. And like, Nate, I think, is certainly in tune with that they got to get a little bit further. And you start stacking losses up in the Sweet 16 when you have teams that are probably capable of going a little bit further. I'm not sure if this team's in that category as well as last year's team was. Certainly isn't. But, it makes it a big game. It makes it, I want to say, pivotal. It's not like a legacy shaping game, but it's just one of those things where, a few months from now, you're thinking, man, like, we lost in the Sweet 16 again. Could have gotten to Elite Eight. Like, it's how basketball goes, but I think this team has a chance to win this game. I'm just really interested to see what happens. It could go a few different ways in my mind.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with Nate that there's, take pride in getting to the Sweet 16, take pride in getting to the second weekend, because only 16 teams get to this point in the season. But, you look historically, the reason Duke is Duke, the reason North Carolina is North Carolina, the reason UConn more recently is UConn, like, the reason the Blue Bloods are the Blue Bloods is because they find a way routinely to play the entire second weekend and more often than not get to the Final Four. Alabama has never done that in the history of their program. They've gotten to the Elite Eight once, lost to UConn in 2004, again, another blue blood. So we'll see if this is maybe the weekend they break through. I think we're under the consensus that it might not be, but at the same time, you've given yourself the opportunity and there's something to be said about that. And, we'll find out Thursday if they can take advantage.
Yeah. And I looked it up last night. I mean, BYU is the only school with more program wins in history that has not gone to the Final Four. Princeton's the only team that's only gone to one Elite Eight that has more program wins in history than Alabama. So you're trying to get over that hump as a program, as a team. So, there's that. And, I think, it's like they've done a lot of great things in the regular season under Nate Oates. They've won 2 regular season titles. They've won 2 tournaments. They've beaten some really highly ranked teams. They beat Houston and North Carolina back-to-back last season. They beat Gonzaga and Baylor as top 5 teams the year before. Like, they've done some really good things, but the NCAA tournament resume is not quite as strong under the Nate Oates era. And this, again, is an opportunity for them to change that. As, like you said, some of these blue blood programs have done. In their histories, it's like, even though you're a lower seed, it's a tough game. Like, you just go out and you win it, you make it happen. So again, I think this team is capable of doing it, but just really interested to see what happens.
Yeah. It'll be, they tip their the second game on Thursday. So they'll start with Arizona Clemson, at the Staples Center. Crypto Arena. Shout out to the folks in LA who remember that. So they'll start with Arizona Clemson. Then 25 minutes after the conclusion of that game, we'll get Alabama, North Carolina. I believe both of those games are on CBS. I know for sure Alabama, North Carolina is. Yeah, it'll be a fun one. That's all we've got today. We'll probably be back. Mike's actually going to join me out in LA for those that are interested for the game this coming Thursday. We'll see how they do Thursday, if they win, they play again Saturday. So we'll come back with the podcast either after a loss on Thursday or potentially after, either a Final Four run or we'll see how they do on Saturday through the rest of the weekend. But in the meantime, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, even our Bama 247 YouTube page. Subscribe to Bama 247 and 247 Sports. Believe we're running a special because we're always running a special spring special, 50% off of Bama 247 VIP membership. Absolutely take advantage of that, especially if you are an Alabama Crimson Tide fan. Thank you again, Mike, for joining me. We'll see you in LA later this week. We appreciate you guys always for listening, and we will talk to you all again soon.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does. 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.